Because we're getting ready for season 2 of Millennial, I've decided to release a bonus episode, meaning it's not a traditional day in the life of Megan Tan episode. Instead, it's a little something different. It's a behind-the-scenes look at making Millennial, told through a conversation that I had with Dan Lizette, who interviewed me for his show, The Podcast Digest, which is a podcast about podcasters talking about their podcasts. So in this episode, you're going to hear me tell Dan about the backstory of Millennial and the weird outer body experiences I have when I'm editing my life into a show. I'm also going to explain why I switched from photojournalism to radio, and I'm going to talk about the step-by-step process of making this podcast. But before we launch into everything, I just want to let you know that all of this happened over Skype, so my voice sounds a little weird, and it was recorded back in August, so there may be some date-oriented references. But other than that, here is the theme music. You're listening to Millennial, a podcast about what people don't really teach you, how to maneuver your 20s.
My guest this week, as you know already from the episode title, is Megan Tan from Millennial. Megan, welcome to the Podcast Digest.
Thank you, Dan, for having me.
What was sort of the motivation, if you will, to make this journey a podcast?
So I graduated from college probably about a year ago. And when I graduated, I had no idea what I wanted to do. My boyfriend, Ben, and I, we had just moved in together. And I had never lived with a boy before. And I was just having a really hard time. He has his own production company, so he was like doing really, really well. We were living in Portland, Maine. I kind of like toyed with the idea of going into radio, but I had no idea how to even begin. And Ben witnessed me just struggling. Like, we both went our separate ways one day. Like, he went on a hike in the mountains, and I went to go hang out with some friends, and he came back. And at the time, we had been listening to Alex Bloomberg's Startup, and he was like, you should make something like Startup, except you should talk about what you're doing and like where you are right now as a millennial, you know? And he was the one who said, you should call it Millennial. So he kind of like planted this idea into my head, and I was like, oh, you know, like, that sounds great. And then I still was in the position of like, how am I going to do that? You know?
Like, right.
And so I didn't for a very long time. And during that time, I was still recording. You know, like, I had a lot of equipment because I had studied photojournalism and video while I was in school. But I just kept putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. And I didn't really start moving forward until like my mother came to visit me, and she was just like, you know, like, you need to change something within your own life that can transform how you feel about yourself. And everybody knows that you can do what you want to do, but like, do you know that you can do what you want to do? She asked me a lot of those questions. And so I kind of just like bit the bullet and wrote down a list for myself and kept myself accountable. And so that's kind of how it started.
I was curious, Megan, when you and Ben were having those initial conversations, when he said you should make it about yourself and where you are right now, I imagine that during those conversations, you had some recognition, at least in part, that this was going to be a very personal process. Was there any fear about kind of entering that world and sort of exposing this side of this part of your life to the world?
I didn't really think that anybody was going to be listening to it, to be honest.
Right.
And the answer is yes. Like, I am not the type of person to sit across the table from you and tell you that my parents split up a couple weeks ago. You know, like, I'm not that type of person. Like, I'm very jovial and gregarious, but like, I don't get personal with people who I don't know and who aren't in like an immediate circle of friends. So that was tough. And when Ben pitched this idea to me, he actually didn't think I was going to do it because he knows me And he knows that even in our relationship, it took me a really long time to open up to him. And so when he said, oh, you should document your life and then put it into a podcast, he was just like, oh, she's probably not going to do it. Because that's not Megan, you know. But to be honest, the pieces that move me the most are the ones that have a lot of depth to them. And I want to create the things that I love to consume. So I literally felt like I have nothing to lose. Like, why not just do this? Even now that like a lot of intimate moments and questions that I ask myself are kind of like out there floating around, like being vulnerable is, it's hard, but it's also always worth it, you know? Can I give you a quick story?
Please.
So when I was in photojournalism school, there was this moment where I did this photo story and I was hanging out with this guy who was a lot older. And I went over to his house and it was just him and I. And he like started exposing himself to me as I was like taking pictures of him. And I remember just like running out of his house and like running into my car and like panicking and being like really, really like scared and nervous about like what just happened. And like after you take all of these pictures, like I had spent a week with him and I had my deadline to like show this class, and like taking the pictures and spending time with the people is just like half of the battle. You know, the other half is like you have to go through the photos and edit them. And so here I was like going through this edit of this man who I've just felt disgusted by, right. You know? But I felt like if I ran away from it, I didn't want to run away from it, you know? Anyway, long story short, like I ended up presenting these photographs to my class. And at the time I thought I had gotten over the situation. I didn't tell anybody about it. I had kept everything to myself until like I put these photographs up on the wall and you have to talk about this person. And so I ended up telling my whole class this story about what happened to me and how it made me feel as like a female photographer and how I don't think like a lot of men worry about that. And that moment, even though I was like bawling in front of these people who like didn't really know me and I didn't really open up to, I felt like that conversation sparked a larger conversation in the class about what it's like to be a female photographer. And like a lot of students who were males came up to me afterwards and they really thanked me for being brave enough to do that. And so not only did I really create some amazing bonds of friendships, like after that moment of really opening up my life, but everybody started doing stories about women. So I feel like when you do open up your life and your heart and you're honest to people, like it may be hard on your end, but the response is generally like welcomed, you right. know? Yeah.
Well, I can tell you as an aside, as a husband and a father of a daughter, that story makes my blood boil. And it's what a horrific experience that absolutely must have been. I was also thinking, was that the concept that this might be the end of photojournalism for you?
No, it wasn't actually.
Okay. Because no. It would have made sense if that was a choice you made.
No, it wasn't. No, I wasn't running away from photojournalism. I mean, I still love taking pictures and I still love chasing light. And I still love photo. The thing that really got me was when I went to a newspaper and I did an internship and everyone there was miserable. Maybe not everyone, but like the majority of people who I saw were so completely unhappy. And while I was an intern at the newspaper, that was actually when I started listening to Radiolab the most. And I was also like very interested in narrative and story structure. And so I used to I used to like transcribe by hand like my favorite episodes.
Wow.
And I used to try to understand like why, like what are they doing to make me care about this character months after I listened to him or her. And I didn't get that from photos. I didn't feel like the people that were being photographed, I could connect to them on a level that I could connect to people who I heard over the radio.
That's awesome. That's a great explanation to sort of the change in direction, because I can completely understand, and I think a lot of people could, the difference between the two. So on Millennial and collecting this sound that you're now working on, I really wanted to ask you about, and you alluded to it earlier, a little bit about the production process. I'm curious because when you listen to the episodes, there is so much. This is not recorded in studio by and large. I'm kind of curious, how much are you recording as the days and weeks go by? How much audio do you collect? How do you then comb through all of that to create an episode? Can you tell us a little bit about this process?
So I generally, I collect most things. Like, yeah, like I tell my parents when I talk to them on the phone, assume that you're being recorded. Like the majority of conversations I have with my friends, I say, assume that you're being recorded because that is what is happening.
Right.
And so there's a lot of audio. It's become like a visceral reaction now of when I need to record and when I don't need to record. So if I'm having a conversation with someone, I will feel that I need to record. Because I'll say to myself, am I going to regret this later? Like, it's a very, like, brief second where I'll be like, am I going to regret this later? Yes, no, yes, you know, go, give me equipment. And I'll be like, hold on, you know. And then Ben will just, like, roll his eyes and be like, So there is a lot. And what I generally do is I always start with an outline before I touch any audio. Like I generally know what the episode is going to be about. And so I'll just pull all of these clips that I think relate to what I'm talking about and I'll transcribe them. Like I'll just go through and I transcribe a lot. And from the transcription, I go through and I bold things and then I bring down those clips and then I put them all in a session and then I do some narration. And then I like the goal is to get a rough draft out as quick as possible so that you can get as much feedback on it as possible, because that is just the beginning of the headache that is going to happen. Right. You know, like, yeah. And it's like in the beginning of all of this, it was really hard because not only was I working alongside my significant other, like the person who I see every day and the person who I love. Like Ben is my immediate editor. He is the person who listens to all my first drafts when they're awful. And and because we kind of have a similar background and the same vocabulary for story structure and narration, I trust him. And then right after we talk and go through it, his first question is to me is always like, you know, like, what are your thoughts? And I'll tell him like what I'm thinking and he generally agrees, which just goes to show you that you already know what you need to work on and you just need somebody to kind of like reaffirm that, yes, I think you need to do that too. And then to offer up different solutions. So there's a lot of editing that happens. And recently, like this past episode, I mean, I was working on a completely different episode for like 2 weeks. And then I realized that there wasn't going to be a story. And then I decided to run in a totally different direction. So I am still winging it. Yeah.
And there's a lot of that, I'm sure. There's a lot of that, yeah. For especially attempting to create what you are actually creating, which is, you know, this almost documentary style podcast, because it's another one of those unique elements of what you are putting together here, because there are a lot of interview shows. This is an interview show. There are a lot of, you know, other NPR, This American Lifestyle, that are based on subject interviews. You, it's almost like you're picking up pieces of real conversations in life.
Mm. And yeah, I guess I'm just very fortunate to have people around me who really support me. Like, I will tell you, with episode 5, when I'm talking to my mom and I'm talking about men and money and, you know, I make this statement about my mother and her relationship with money. And before I published that, I talked to her about it.
Right.
Because I didn't know if I was making the right assumptions, and I didn't know how she would feel about it. And so I called her up and I was like, hey, look, I'm talking about this piece, you know, and this is what I'm going to say. Like, what do you think? Is this accurate? Yeah, that was like a line that I didn't want her to hear it and be like, what is she, you know, like, no, and then take offense to it. So, and she was totally fine. She was like, right. Oh yeah, that sounds accurate. You know,
your mom sounds great, by the way.
she is really amazing. I remember that one. That one was tough.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine. And that was a great segue to my next question, which is, you talked about the editing process. You and Ben sit down, Ben's sort of your first pass, and you guys go through and say, you know, start to look for the construct of the show and go from there. What is it like, for lack of a better term, to basically look at so much personal content as a story, almost like attempting to have this objectivity to your own life in terms of an entertainment product? That's got to feel something weird, right?
Yeah.
Or am I just crazy? Or does that not really happen?
You're right. I think it was definitely a lot harder in the beginning. Not so much because it was like my life, but it was like I really didn't know how to take criticism.
Right.
It's really interesting because I feel like when I listen to it, it's like I'm not listening to myself. You know, I don't know if that would make sense, but
almost like an out-of-body experience.
It is like an out-of-body experience. I feel like millennial to me really is like a place to play and experiment and try new things and push the boundaries for myself. And so when I listen to it, I'm asking myself those questions. And I'm asking myself, like, is the story succinct? Is this, you know, like, what narration isn't working? When Ben listens to it, I watch him and I watch how he reacts. And there are like cliche narration pieces that I put in there. And then we both like roll our eyes. You know what I mean?
Right.
You're just like, okay, I'll take that one out. Like I'll look at him and just be like, oh, like, you know, I'll be like, did you see I tried something new? You know what I mean? Stuff like that. I will tell you this. I haven't re-listened to them in a long time. So like when I do make them, I shed them off.
Right.
Yeah, I do.
So let's talk about Pulse Launch. I'm really interested to hear, you mentioned earlier that you didn't think anybody would listen originally. And clearly people are listening. First of all, when this process started, what were the thoughts? What was running through your head? How does this road felt so far?
Yeah. So there in this last episode, we had recorded serendipitously when we found out that Millennial was reviewed in The Guardian. And that was kind of like the big, like, oh my gosh, you know.
You, it was a great reaction on the episode. It kept going, his name escapes me, but he kept saying, The Guardian. Do you understand that? The Guardian. I remember that. That was excellent.
It was so true. Like, we had no idea what was going on. And mostly it was because when we had started the podcast, I remember looking at Ben. I think this was even before I had an episode up. And I was like, Ben, like, could this get, like, what happens if this gets big? You know? And he like looks at me and he's like, Megan, you can't think of things like that. Like, you can't have that intention, you know? Don't let that be on your forefront. And I was like, okay. So I didn't have that intention at all. And then when things started happening,
they happened organically, which, yeah, has just been almost like a pleasant surprise, you know? like I'm working my ass off to like make a podcast that I really care about so I can do the thing that I love. And hey, look, people are saying you can do this, you know, like you know, it's almost like a lot of big high fives and like hooping and hollering. You know what I mean?
Right.
But at the same time, when The Guardian did happen, like I was still working at the restaurant.
Right.
And like I would go to the restaurant and nobody would know who I like was, and nobody cared what I was doing. And I mean, to me, it just felt very funny, the juxtaposition between like getting like all of a sudden your phone is blowing up because everybody is tweeting at you versus like nobody is trying to talk to you in real life, you know?
And then you go to work and they're just asking you to clear tables.
Yeah, asking you to clear tables and like, what kind of wine should I get with my dinner?
Right. That is really, the dichotomy there has got to be surreal.
Yeah. But it's also humbling because I feel like this last year, even with like following my goal to become like a producer and to really get my feet dirty in radio, I mean, I've experienced like a lot of setbacks as well, you know, and I felt like I was being swayed by a lot of negative things, if that makes sense. Like if something happened that wasn't in my favor, I felt like very defeated. And I remember thinking to myself, like, I don't want things on the outside to have control over how I feel. You know what I mean? Like, how awful is that for like all of these external things that you can't control? They're like pushing you back and forth, like they're big waves in the ocean and you're like swimming for your life. You know what I mean? And I remember even when this happened, I remember thinking to myself, like, this is also like an external force that can sway me from not continuing to like be consistent and like continue to produce just quality work.
Megan Tan from Millennial, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me here today.
Yes, Dan, thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure.
Thanks for tuning in, folks. I'll talk to you again next week. Until then, my name's Dan Lizette with the Podcast Digest.
So this was just a portion of the conversation that Dan and I had. If you want to hear the full version, which is 56 minutes long, you can go to thepodcastdigest.info and look for Millennial. There you'll also find conversations Dan had with Alex Goldman from Reply All, Joe Richman from Radio Diaries, Alex Kappelman from Pitch, Devin Taylor from The Timbre, Aaron Mankey from Lore, and tons of others. Editing help to create this episode was provided by Ben Severance and Dylan Ward. Also, a special thanks to Ashley Norman and, of course, to Dan Lizette. Thanks, Dan! You can also follow us on Twitter at Millennial, MILLENNIAL, PDCST, like podcasts without the vowels. I also wanted to send a shout out to all the people who have been sending in their pitches. If you have a story about maneuvering your 20s, send it to me. Just go to the website, millennialpodcast.org, scroll down to the bottom where it says pitch us a story, and type it in right there. I'm Megan Tan, and thank you for listening.